Holcomb cutting off federal unemployment benefits, the governor not a fan of monetary incentives for the COVID-19 vaccine, plus Senator Mike Braun on the January 6th commission, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 21st, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana will opt out of federal unemployment benefit programs effective in mid-June. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports. Governor Eric Holcomb is following other states in an attempt to push people back into the workforce.
Starting June 19th, Indiana will no longer pay an extra $300 in federal benefits each week for all unemployment claims. It will also completely end benefit programs for people who are self-employed or gig workers that roughly 70,000 Hoosiers are accessing. Also set to end is an extended benefit program for the longtime unemployed, another 62,000 people currently benefit from. Holcomb says the move is in response to employers complaining that they can't grow if they can't hire enough workers. He says there's just under 120,000 jobs that need to be filled. But economists say there's still no evidence unemployment benefits are by and large keeping people out of jobs. Instead, they point to stagnant wages and a lack of childcare options during the ongoing pandemic.
Will cutting off federal unemployment benefits reduce labor shortages in Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith, and for the first time in what I counted as 433 days, we have the full panel back at our desk, and we are very, very happy about it. So Elise Schrock, will this move from the governor have the desired effect?
I'm worried that the desired effect is that this is going to be an overnight change and all of a sudden our employment issues are going to be fixed. And I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that this extra $300 is enough to make a huge difference. But with the folks who need it, and our last month's unemployment rate was 3.9%. So these are people who really need help. I think it will be harmful to them, but overall is not going to change our employment issues, because I think it is much more complicated than we're making it out to be. I think we're lagging in vaccines. People are hesitant to go back to work. We are seeing a number of different factors. This is an easy one to say, like A plus B equals C. We'll see, but I'm concerned.
I mean, the governor, legislative leaders talked about the idea that we're back to sort of pre-pandemic labor shortages. So are cutting and it's not
we had this problem before.
Yeah, exactly. So right. is getting rid of all this stuff more than 2 months earlier than it would have been cut off by the federal government, is getting rid of that really going to all of a sudden solve any problems?
Well, I think so. I think the population you're targeting was economically fragile to begin with, right? Before all of this. And so you put another $300 in their pocket every week. That's a lot of money to them. These are hourly workers. These are low-skilled jobs. And they're ones that are not being filled. And they're the ones that are opening up last in terms of restaurant capacity, hotels, tourism, a lot, certainly in central Indiana that depends on those people. So let's not discount that $300 is a lot of money to somebody who's working a low-skill hourly job, right? And you've provided an incentive now for over a year for them to make more money every week, and that's relevant. But we do have to go back to what we were doing before with COVID. But it's comprehensive, and so the governor directed DWD 2 weeks ago to understand the demographics of the people that were making this money. How do we connect them to get them back into the skill up programs that the state was trying to get these lower skill workers into? So. I agree with Elise, it's not going to change anything overnight, but it does create an incentive to go refill these positions that need to be filled, and that is a problem. It is anecdotally, I live downtown, and it it is a problem downtown. You have to go to a restaurant or two sometimes to like find like a full service.
And I agree with you. $300 is a lot, but is it enough to cover childcare when you're trying to weigh going back to work?
Yeah, I think those were all problems before, and those are problems that do need to be addressed and solved. But this one, we've got to stop we have to stop subsidizing people to not go to work and not try to. We can't address those problems until they're actual problems. And for some people, they're not right now because they're making more money on unemployment than they are when they were working.
At a very minimum, does removing these extra benefits give employers no more excuses?
It probably removes one of the excuses that they've been pointing toward. I'm not sure, though, that how much of a correlation there really is here. I guess Elise is making a point that I would probably echo, which is you have some portion of the workforce that is, for any number of reasons, difficult to place. And these are people who probably, because they don't have the skills that enabled them to get jobs quickly, either at the end of the pandemic or certainly now, I'm not sure they're going to just waltz right into the first position that comes along. We're not going to eradicate unemployment in the state of Indiana. I think that would be kind of a pipe dream. What may happen when all is said and done is this may not move the needle enough to address the shortage of workers, but in the meantime, it would be interesting to see how much federal dollars that would have gone into the economy in Indiana will not go into the economy in Indiana now because those funds are being turned back.
There's been a lot of focus, understandably so, on the extra $300 benefit that everyone on unemployment is getting, but he also is cutting off the unemployment program for the self-employed, for independent contractors, which does not exist without that federal program. And so for those folks, they're just getting everything cut off. Is that the population that's going to be hurt a lot worse here and we might have to, down the road, look at a little harder?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more than the 300. I mean, that whole population, which is maybe 60,000, I think, who are currently getting those benefits. Also, the extension of unemployment benefits goes away. So, in all, we're talking several hundred thousand Hoosiers who are going to lose benefits of some kind. And I'm not going to sit here and say that there aren't some people out there who are choosing to stay at home because they don't have to work and they still get paid, you know? But, you know, I think it's too simplistic to be like, oh, this will just end. We can fill those 120,000 jobs now. Everything's going to be fine.
All right. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb is not a fan of the state using monetary incentives to push more people to get the COVID-19 vaccine. His comments on the issue this week came after Ohio announced it will give away millions of dollars to encourage people to get vaccinated. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine announced a million-dollar lottery system for vaccinated Ohioans last week using federal COVID-19 relief dollars. Governor Holcomb says he's got a different approach.
I've taken an approach to try to entice people by making it uber convenient to get vaccinated and appeal to their better senses about this is how we all get through this quicker.
Holcomb says he's not comfortable with monetary incentives.
Some people will never get vaccinated, and some people might wait until they waited for that monetary enticement. So I don't want folks to wait.
According to the CDC, only 10 states are worse than Indiana in the percentage of their population with at least one shot of the vaccine. Mike O'Brien, Indiana is struggling compared to other states to convince folks to get vaccinated. So should the governor be so quick to reject this idea or something like it?
Yes, he should. And let me be very unpopular in my position on this and rain on everyone's parade. Okay. This is an absurd proposal in all these states that are doing it. It is absurd, but it's also the most American thing I've ever heard of. It's not enough that all of the incentives are aligned for you to get a vaccine, that the global economy is reopening, that you can go to a bar, you can go to a baseball game, you can go to work, you have certainty that your kids are going to go back to school. But now we got to give them a scratch-off lottery ticket to actually do it. It's insane to me. You know, I understand that we're behind. At some point, the government has done an incredible, federal and state governments have done, I know we've complained about rates and, you know, uptake rates and, you know, the spread and all that stuff. In hindsight, though, it is a remarkable thing that in 6 or 8 months, the United States produced a vaccine, broke down the regulatory barriers, federal government pulled every lever they had, leveraged private industry to have automakers make respirators. You know, I mean, they did all of this stuff. And now they're at the end of it, and people are like, I don't know if I want to take it. Well, I don't know what to do with those people. But at some point, the government's role is like, hey, we did our job. Take it or don't take it. You know, like, I don't want polio or meningitis or COVID-19, so I got the vaccination. And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, I think that's more than a little. Should the governor consider doing something, maybe not the million-dollar giveaway that Ohio is doing, but we've seen Maryland, New York, Illinois has given away Six Flags tickets. Is there something the state government should do?
I mean, you can be annoyed about it. That is fair. That is your opinion. But here's the thing. The reality is we're lagging. We're not doing well with this. Give them cookies. Girl Scout cookies were great. A T-shirt, money, whatever it takes. Let's get our people vaccinated.
Has Ohio, I mean, have, I think I saw Ohio saw like a 28% increase.
They did, although to be fair, like the day it was announced, I looked at their rates versus ours, and I've been tracking them for a week, and I did the math this morning. We are still, our rate is faster than theirs. They're ahead of us overall, but in that week since that announcement, Indiana had more vaccinations, you know, than they did. So, and I just want to be clear, Mike, whether you're offended or not, that my parents live in Ohio and they have 10 shots for this $1 million, and I'm rooting for them.
I hope they win it. Anything we can do to take tax money and give it back is to people. I'm a Republican.
Is it a problem, though, that there are more and more states doing stuff like this? So now if Indiana starts to become somewhat of an outlier, there will be people who are like, well, come on, give us something.
I want to have a healthy life, but to your point, I need something to incentivize me to do.
A healthier life.
I need more than eliminating the risk of death.
A healthier life. I don't know. $1 million might buy you a slightly healthier life.
You do get a group of people who, I'm not sure what's going on here. I will say what I think is more effective in the long haul is what Indiana University did this week, which is a joyous occasion in my house with two kids who are looking forward in the fall to going back to quote-unquote normal, and I'm looking forward to going back to football games and whatnot. And that is mandatory vaccinations.
Not just for students, faculty and staff.
That's right. Yeah. But and the point
well, you're
being,
stealing a topic I was going to say for next week, John, but go ahead.
Well, I like to be timely. It ripped from the headlines.
That's
come
true.
On. No, I just think that kind of thing, and I'm sure this will be contested, and I'm sure you think you're unpopular. I'm sure my suggestion is will make me even, I will be even more unpopular with a certain segment of the population. But nobody has, You choose whether you're going to go to school or not. I guess faculty may be a different
wrinkle.
They choose
to work there.
And we do it with meningitis, to your point, with polio, with any number of other things where the kids, I remember when they went to school, we were digging through the files trying to find their vaccination records back to, you know, infancy to prove that they were legit. So it does beg the question, why should this be any different? And I think now we have Notre Dame already did this a few months ago. Now IU, I don't know who else will. But I think this, in the end, will have more of an impact, if it holds, than the notion of a lottery or no lottery.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Indiana do big monetary giveaways like other states to encourage people to get the COVID-19 vaccine? A yes or B no. Last week's question, should Governor Holcomb cut off the extra $300 in federal unemployment benefits for out-of-work Hoosiers as he announced this week? A 38% of you said yes, he should. 62% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana U.S. Senator Mike Braun echoed talking points from prominent conservatives this week in dismissing calls to create a commission to study the January 6th U.S. Capitol insurrection. The bipartisan legislation would form a panel modeled after the 9/11 Commission. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell came out against the measure, and Braun followed suit. The Hoosier lawmaker says the commission would discover nothing law enforcement agencies haven't already found while investigating and charging hundreds in association with the attack. Many charged in the attacks testified under oath they were incited by Republicans and former President Trump's calls to, quote-unquote, stop the steal. Braun, who voiced multiple unfounded concerns over the validity of election results, ultimately certified results immediately after the insurrection. This week, the senator said many of his initial questions were answered.
Were there some irregularities? I found out most of our research that a lot of what had been done legally by local election commissions, local jurisdictions.
At least a half dozen Hoosiers face federal charges for their role in the attack on the Capitol.
All right, John Schwana, sell me on rejecting the creation of the January 6th Commission.
I got nothing for you. I mean, it's hard to sell the argument that this is not a worthwhile exercise. It was so disruptive to our country and potentially disruptive to our democracy long term. There's so many questions still that haven't been answered, and we still have new events or happenings connected to that event which are troubling. This was it last week, about a week ago, I think, that we saw the first active duty service member who was charged in connection with that. Before, it had been reservists or it had been people who have retired. Somehow, when you think people who were involved in this insurrection were, in this case at least, this one Marine was active duty service, this calls, in my mind, for a thorough look at what went wrong, and not just that day, but what led up to it, and how it can be prevented in the future.
Yeah, I mean, some of the folks who were rejecting the idea for this commission say, well, there's hundreds, literally hundreds of law enforcement investigations into some of these folks. They will find out what we need to know. But isn't there a lot more that we can find out?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of the real base decisions aren't really criminal questions, but, you know, who was in charge of what, you know, response that day? Was the guard told to stand down before they were told to come in? You know, I mean, those things the local police aren't worried about. And also, I want to point out that, you know, we've had commissions like this for like 9/11. Obviously, the police and the FBI and every
major historical event
looked
in US
into it,
history.
And we still did a commission. We did one for, you know, who shot JFK. We had, you know, the Warren Commission. So this is not a thing that we've never done before.
It seems to me a lot of the folks who are objecting to this see it as an investigation of Donald Trump, and I don't think that's necessarily what it is. But if you're serving Hoosiers who overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump, is that a reason to reject it? If that's what you think this is?
No, this isn't, and I don't know how dumb he thinks Hoosiers are. I mean, the thing working against him right now, trying to sweep this under the rug, is we all watched it live. We watched this happen live. And we didn't get to go to work the next week at the State House because there were unraveling security concerns that stemmed from that. This was a major event. It deserves to have a study, a commission, in a transparent way for the American people so that we can know what happened and we can learn from it and we can move forward and do better. And, you know, you can try and pretend like it's not a big deal if you're Senator Braun, but the thing working against you is the fact we all watched it happen.
You still have people who are convinced that this was Antifa protesters. Matt, yeah, that's what Congressman Matt Gaetz, when he had other things to worry about.
Well, Matt's got a lot more to worry about than
yes,
that.
Yes, but I mean, there are people who still believe that.
Long term, in terms of the sort of electoral impact on someone like Mike Braun, does he have working for him in this case that there are so many Republicans in Congress who are against it, and so increasingly, I'm sure, it will be painted as a partisan commission out to attack Republicans? Is that going to help him with any sort of impact electorally from this?
We'll see. I mean, this meets that threshold that Nikki described. That you're going to remember in 25 years where you were when you were watching that. You know, and that, to me, it just doesn't have to be some kind of data-driven exercise. That's going to be the standard. Do you remember where you were then? And did we learn why? No. Did we learn who? Yeah, through the law enforcement investigations. Did we understand Capitol security better? I mean, for those of us who, like, had friends in that building and knew people that were being rushed off the floor of the House, and not to mention Mike Pence. I mean, he's from Indiana. However you regard his politics personally, they were going to, like, what if they found Mike Pence? What if they make a wrong turn down the hallway
and they care. Yeah, apparently his brother doesn't care.
Let me tell you what. If someone said something like that about my sister and I had the power to vote to have that studied, you better believe I would be.
It's unbelievable to me that they don't even want the question asked. It's like it never happened. And this was a horrific day in American history for sure.
All right. Well, Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita is leading a multi-state effort calling on the Biden administration to drop a proposal aimed at funding more comprehensive and inclusive civics and history programs. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay explains Rokita sent a letter to U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona outlining his concerns about prioritizing anti-racism education.
Last month, the U.S. Department of Education proposed two priorities it's considering using to award some civic and history education grant funding. The first would prioritize projects that include diverse historical perspectives and create inclusive learning environments. The second aims to improve students' ability to spot fake news and understand biases. But Rokita's letter claims the proposed priorities undermine what he calls traditional American history. He's urging the department to drop them from consideration. He says the department should make clear that funding cannot be awarded to projects that paint the country as, quote, irredeemably racist. Rokita's letter was signed by 19 other state attorneys general. The department has yet to respond.
Nikki Kelly, what does this have to do with serving Hoosiers as attorney general?
I can't come up with anything. I mean, obviously, if this had come from, you know, the newly appointed Secretary of Education who wanted to have a say on curriculum and classrooms, cool, fine, you know. But his office has nothing to do with education policy.
This isn't a lawsuit.
No, exactly. It's not a lawsuit. It's not. I don't get it. But also, you know, what we have known about Todd Rokita from the beginning is if there's a controversy, he is like a moth to a flame. He wants to be part of it, and so this is his way of doing it.
A statewide elected official going after a political issue for attention is not new to Indiana or this country. So in that sense, will most Hoosiers look at this and go, well, it's just Todd Rokita. Who cares?
No, I think because people who are concerned about this issue are enthusiastic enough or zealous enough that they will respond because somebody is saying what they themselves agree with, whether or not he's justified in wading into that fray. You're right. There's nothing unusual about people, and we've seen it with Democrats, we've seen it with Republicans, whether it was Secretary of State, whether it was Attorney General, who would talk way in on things that had absolutely nothing to do with any of the issues that they dealt with directly. And usually, to me, that's always an indication that this is not the job you're in right now that you want. This is a clear sign that you want something else. Now, yeah, whether that's an elective, I don't know what you want, but you don't like the job you have because you're not paying attention to the matters that are actually involved in your position. And again, I say that about Republicans. I said it about Democrats who did it at the time when they're dealing with Tiananmen Square and China. I mean, which was an actual thing, but I remember.
Yes, it was.
I mean, the people weighing in on Tiananmen Square.
We are less than 6 months into Todd Rokita's tenure as Attorney General. What's he running? Is he running for something else?
Yeah, I think he's been pretty open about that. And we're entering that season. It is what it is. I mean, there are real concerns with how curriculum is changing, how it's being taught, But I think this is also in the bucket of the Civil War statue getting torn down overnight. The extremes go to the opposite extremes. Okay, if we want to introduce racism curriculum and education about that, the other side, the far other side, reacts and says, "No, we got to do traditional American history. We can't rip down a Civil War statue. We've got to keep it up forever." Can we just have a rational conversation about what this?
Todd Rokita saying things like this in the position of power that he is in is why we need diversity and inclusion and equity training. I mean, we have to stop talking like institutional racism is something of the past that we have to talk about and learn. This is what's happening. This is someone who is trying to block DEI. This is someone who also this month is trying to investigate 8 organizations led by people of color to lift up people of color. This is a problem. I mean, we can talk about elections and politics and how it affects that realm, but I am concerned about how it actually affects black and brown people in our state. And I think this is an issue. I think when he says traditional education, that is whitewashing our curriculum. That's a problem. We need to be taking this seriously. White people need to be calling out white people who say things like this. Republicans need to be calling out other Republicans who do things like this. Anyone in politics, Democrats, we need to be calling out Democrats that do this. This is a problem, and we can talk about it in a political realm, but I am concerned about the life and safety of black and brown people in this state who are at risk when people in leadership positions do this.
And don't forget, this also training has to do with spotting fake news, with making young people who receive this training better Americans, better participants in the democratic process,
don't do what their parents
and being savvy consumers of news. Right. I'd argue that today's episode of this show is a good example for why people need to be discerning about this.
All right, well, finally, as we talked about earlier, Ohio is giving away millions of dollars to encourage people to get vaccinated. Illinois is giving out tens of thousands of tickets to Six Flags Great America. Mike O'Brien, what's an Indiana-themed giveaway the Hoosier State should get behind?
I think my position on this exercise is well established.
As it turns out, you were the wrong person to go to. What's an Indiana-themed giveaway that the Hoosier State should be doing?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I'm a big fan of women-owned business. I would love just a lifetime supply of Just Pop In, honestly.
I totally just want to be able to, have a bunch of us taking shots, making three-pointers at halftime of Pacers games to see if you win the million.
So, first, get the vaccine. That enters you into a random drawing.
They do it for kids in college. They win their scholarships that way.
There you go. All right, well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.